Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone is coping well, or at least sufficiently, in body and mind, with the lockdown that we're experiencing in Melbourne, which seems like it will be going on for quite a while in the future. Fortunately, we have Zoom these days, and we can continue, as Anya indicated at the beginning, to meet as a Sangha remotely, if not in person. Today, I'd like to reflect a bit on some of my more recent experiences. And I would give this talk a title of something like Bodhisattvas All Around, or Everyday Bodhisattvas. Because my experience recently has been that I've encountered many bodhisattvas in the journey that we've had in shifting our moving house from the bush to the suburbs. So recently, we've had a great physical and really emotional upheaval in leaving our owner-built house of 35 or 40 years in the bush to more sensible surroundings in the suburbs, which has meant both a physical and emotional uprooting of our lives and resettling of it. So I found that this period in the last, well, it's really been since March or April, a very physically and mentally demanding time in my life, probably the most that I've encountered ever. It's a time in which we've relied very heavily on getting help from other people, and many of the encounters we've had with friends, neighbors, and strangers have been very uplifting. And it seems to me the qualities that I have found in other people are akin to the qualities that we associate with bodhisattvas, at least during the period of our short encounters or longer encounters with others. So, what's a bodhisattva? I guess we all have pictures of people who we might consider bodhisattva, or maybe we don't. Maybe it's something that's far removed, or we think it's far removed from our lives, and we think of a Chinese or Japanese itinerant monk or something like that. Basically, a bodhisattva, as far as I understand it, is a being who's intent on becoming a Buddha. The Buddha himself refers to his own self in previous lifetimes before attaining enlightenment as his being a bodhisattva. In the Mahayana tradition that we follow, a bodhisattva may be defined as any being who resolves to generate bodhicitta, or compassion, and follows the vehicle of the bodhisattva. So intention to become, to follow a path of compassion, to become or attain Buddhahood. And traditionally, it takes many lifetimes in the canon of Buddhism to attain this state. In Korea, it seems, it also can refer to some lay residents of monasteries, people who help out, who help the monks in, let's say, cleaning, cooking, things like that, can be seen as bodhisattvas, a more sort of mundane view of that, but of what bodhisattvas are. And in Western literature, it often seems to refer to someone who postpones their enlightenment in order to save all beings from suffering. So someone who has theoretically, who is very far along the pathway of Buddhahood, but refrains from ultimate nirvana, I guess, to keep a presence in this everyday world of ours and to help other people by their compassionate acts and attitudes. We encounter that in some of the readings that we've recited today. So in the Heart Sutra, where the central figure really is the Bodhisattva of compassion, or Avalokitesvara or Guanyin Kanzeon in different traditions, who we're told saw into the emptiness of every construct. And then toward the end of the Heart Sutra, we're told that the Bodhisattva who dwells in this perfect wisdom, attaining nothing, is not entrapped by delusive fantasies. It's a little bit of a description in the Heart Sutra of the state of being a Bodhisattva. Now, I found that when we needed help, which was a lot during this process of shifting, it came, and it came in all sorts of forms. We had the most gentle and positive young removalists, one probably West Indian and one guy from Ireland, who just worked tirelessly all day with us, very calmly, just asking what to do with this, where should we put this, should I wrap this up for you, and then staying on until really it got dark in the evening, moving things into our new place. And it was just so pleasant working with them. And they were having a good time as well. And they were remarking, for instance, it's much easier, much more fun if you don't have to go into a high-rise apartment, which this is not. The people who purchased our house in the bush, it was very important for us to be able to sell to people who would fit into the environmental living zone community that we had left. And they turned out to be not only good conservationists, as far as we can see, but delightful people who made it easier for us to move out as they moved in. So at the end, when things really get tight and you've got all this junk you don't know what to do with, they were saying, oh, well, you can leave it here for a while. Put it up in the garage and we'll deal with it later on. Don't worry about getting everything out. And that was a huge relief, both their presence and their attitude towards us. When we moved here, the guy who adjusted we finally got an NBN internet. Wow. And we had some trouble at first. And the guy came in and looked at our screen and puttered around. And it just was, again, had a good sense of humor and just very calmly proceeded to find what was a very, very minor problem that we had. The guy who came in to fix the blinds that came with the house to make it easier for my wife to be able to adjust them and put in an extra spring to make them easier to raise and lower. And perhaps the most important thing, we had a structure, we had a platform. We lived in the Bend of Islands on a hill, and we had a platform that stuck out into the hill, maybe a meter and a half, 2 meters high at the bottom. It's about two and a half feet square, and has a hardwood floor, and instead of ordinary railings, has bush railings from limbs that came from the area in which we lived. And we decided that it would be nice to take that with us, because there's a little bit of room in our backyard now. And this was not an easy undertaking. It probably weighed something like half a ton. It had to be sawed off at the bottom and then carried uphill from its position into a ute that a neighbor had. And we looked at it and started to dismantle it, at least cut it off from its base, and realizing that the three or four of us that didn't have a hope of doing anything. And we put out a call to neighbors and friends, and within 15 minutes we had eight able-bodied people who were, which was just about right to carry this immense thing uphill, put it into the ute, and the next day for six people to come back and take it out and sort of plant it in our own little patio. Now, and I found that in both senses of the words, a very moving experience to have all that help in taking a bit of our past into our present. I mentioned this to Jeff Dawson the other day when I was talking with him, and he suggested that there is a relationship between our own behavior and the behavior and attitudes of the people we encountered. So, you know, how do we find bodhisattvas? If I'm saying they're lurking, they're in the bushes, look around, and you might trip over one any day. And it seems to me that the key, so Jeff was suggesting it has something to do with our own attitudes toward other people. And it seems to me this may be an example of what is called, and I'm not up on the literature at the moment, but mirror neurons, that primates, including human beings, seem to have a neuron that mirrors, that has enables us to mirror the behavior of people we encounter. But it's not only the behavior, it's the attitudes and thoughts, the emotions of those we encounter. So often if you encounter somebody who's angry, that puts you off. And similarly, if you encounter a bodhisattva who helps with adjust your NBN TV or whatever it is, that also produces a kind of virtuous circle instead of a vicious one. So to go back to the sutras we were reading, the first step in attracting other bodhisattvas is to monitor our own behavior. So we take a vow, the many beings are numberless, I vow to end their suffering. So if we can live with that kind of attitude towards others, that may promote, via mirror neurons, a similar attitude in them. And, of course, there's a suggestion for dealing with those whose behavior is below the level standard of bodhisattvas in Tora Zenji's bodhisattva vow, which we read this morning, recited this morning. We can be especially understanding and affectionate with foolish people and respond openly, and thus we completely relinquish ourselves. In other words, we overcome our, we activate our own, we overcome our mirror neurons, I guess would be the idea. So instead of returning bad behavior or sullen emotions with the same, we're enjoined to relinquish ourselves, in other words, to overcome perhaps our mirror neurons and respond in kind, creating a virtuous circle rather than a vicious one when we encounter that. So if we look at bad behavior, it's not a very good word, antagonistic behavior or emotions from other people, we don't have to go with our mirror neurons, but can rise above them and act as a bodhisattva, and often mirror images in the other party will kick in as well.